Welcome, everybody, to Health, Wealth, and Divine. My name is Jawanza. Thank you so much for tuning in. I am so very, very excited today. It is the holiday season, and I'm sure that a lot of people are at home, relaxing, getting ready to hear an awesome interview. You've seen the posts, you've seen the advertisements, you know who my special guest is going to be tonight, and you've tuned in because you are ready to be educated. You know, it's an awesome, awesome thing when you have people who have knowledge and they're willing to share it, and they're willing to break concepts down, to break ideas down, to break history down, in a way that you're able to understand it. You know, we know that this show, my particular show, Health, Wealth, and Divine, we talk about a lot of different things. We talk about spirituality. We talk about the holistic health. I mean, we talk about so many different things. And for all of the people who are into the spiritual shows, you know, we talk about ancient religions. We talk about ancient Kemetic or Egyptian religions. We'll talk about Christianity. We'll talk about Hinduism or Buddhism. And, you know, a lot of you wonder, you know, how did we go from there to where we are now? Yeah, it's good to know the ancient cultures. It's good to know, you know, what transpired thousands and thousands of years ago. But do you know what's happening now in the world? And not just what's happening now, but how did we get from there to here? How did we get from then till now? Well, my special guest today is somebody who can help to bridge that gap, who can help bridge that gulf, who can help fill in the blanks, if you will. And I'm very, very excited that he's agreed to be my special guest today. And we're going to be talking about a very important topic. And my special guest today is Dr. Professor Gilbert Dole. He's a PhD and associate professor of French and Francophone studies. And he's the founding director of Ethnic Studies Program at Case Western Reserve University Department of Modern Language and Literature. And he's agreed to be my special guest. By the way, his bio is so long, I needed to shorten it so that we would have time for the show, because if I read his whole bio, we'd have like 5 minutes left in the show to do the show. So I'm very excited to have my special guest on today. We're going to be talking about ethnicity, and we're going to be talking about ethnicity and Francophone studies. Not Francophone studies, but just what's going on in Francophone Africa, okay? Because a lot of times people don't understand, and when they hear certain terms, they don't know what they're listening to. So we're going to be talking about ethnicity and nation building in Francophone Africa, and I want to welcome a special guest, Dr. Doho. Again, it's an honor for me to have the privilege of speaking with you today. I know that my listeners are going to be very, very well educated after they hear this. And, you know, to be able to have an opportunity to have you on tonight and to bring you back for further shows is truly a blessing. Thank you so much for being my guest today.
Yeah, the pleasure is mine, and thank you for having me. And your platform, it's really a great opportunity for me to talk about a topic that is in my heart. You know, my life, I've devoted my life talking about my people. Yes, we'll be talking about the topic is ethnicity and nation building in Francophone Africa. It's really, how will I say, mentioning the topic when talking about Africa. Limit it, or if you want to put it in the little linguistic limitative Francophone, which refer to French. By Francophone Africa, I mean the former colonial territories of Africa, French Africa. 10 nations after World War II. To refer to these nations, which talking about Africa south of the Sahara Desert, I'm not mentioning North Africa, with Morocco, Tunisia, and Algeria, which were specifically Algeria, a French colony for Tunisia and Morocco. They were protectorate. But you know the dubious French attitude when they said you were a protectorate. In actual fact, the method of administration in protectorate were exactly the same colonial administration that they apply in their colony. So I would not be talking about North Africa. I would be concentrating on Africa south of the Sahara Desert. By that, I mean what historically is usually known as French West Africa and French Equatorial Africa, an ensemble of 14 nations, 14 then territory turned 14 nations after World War II, with Guinea being the first to declare its freedom from France in 1958, with Sékou Touré, who a lot of people do not know. Sékou Touré, the first president of Guinea, died here in Cleveland, you know, in Cleveland Clinic. So when
somebody
I talked of Francophone, when I talked of Francophone
Africa. To answer the question, what if someone asks, for example, why is it important to know this? Why is it important to talk about ethnicity and nation building in Francophone Africa? There may be someone out there that says, okay, I understand the title, but why would it be important to understand that? Please,
so,
continue.
So what I'm saying is the negative colonial heritage is what I call in Francophone Africa south of the Sahara Desert, it's so-called 14 nations, okay?
Mm-hmm.
14 nations with French West Africa and the former French West Africa and former Equatorial Africa. When I bring in the concept ethnicity, is to let my audience, to my student, to understand the inadequacy to bring all these people into 14 nations. Why? Because before the what I call the Balkanization of Africa into by European in Germany in 1884, you had kingdoms and even empires in those areas, okay? And when I talked of Africa, man, I'm talking of a continent. I'm not talking of a country, unlike what in the mind of a lot of people they don't know. I'm talking of a continent that in which you can put three times the United States of America and one time Central America. Okay? So it's so vast. And to the colonial discourse, it wasn't an empty land that they discovered. Okay, and they come and develop. No, it was. We are talking of people who were organized before the European. Let us not go back to slavery period. I'm talking of the 1884 divide. They were already organized. And I choose the concept ethnic to refer to ensemble of people who were really organized into structures that were in themselves nations already, because they had language and varieties of languages, of that language. They had political organization. They had, a culture very well seated. In order to really bring them into just one concept, like if they were only by the concept, by that I mean Francophone Africa, it's an aberration. Now, let me just give you one example to understand. You take a country like Cameroon, which is usually they're talking of 250 ethnic groups.
Mm-hmm.
Now, within those 250 ethnic groups, you have people who are really, really organized with structure, the way that are talking in terms of nation. You have kingdoms in the Bamileke area. You have kingdoms or lamidos in the northern province of Cameroon. And so these people were very well organized. Again, mm-hmm. politically, culturally, and economically. But mm-hmm. the colonial, coexistion together. And since the policy of France was what you call assimilation, that is, we don't take into consideration what existed before. We the French people, imposed on the people our own language, our own system of government, our own practice of economic. That's where, in those territories, former territories, turned nations after World War II, you have a problem of nation building. One, because a lot of ethnic groups were brought together to form what you might call a nation. The example of Senegal, the example of Guinea, the example of Cote d'Ivoire, the example of Niger, the example of Mali, etc. I will go on. So you see,
Burkina Faso.
Sorry. What was your question?
I know Burkina Faso. I just threw another country in there.
Yeah, Burkina Faso, etc. So we again, we are talking of not only one people or one nation speaking one language, which is the French language. We are talking of a people who have inherited the French type of system of government, but who are still organized from the perspective of what existed before. French coerced them into one nation. I would say the same with Chad, the same with Central African Republic, the same with Gabon, the same with Cameroon.
Mm-hmm.
So you see today in those nations where the French people imposed their own system of government, in less than 50, 100 years, the French were able to handpick a few individuals that they form in order to establish in those countries the exact type of nations that you have in France today, with the system that is imposed to local ethnic groups who, and it's unfortunate to say, most of them, 50% to 60, 70%, do not speak the French language or the French, the language of administration, the language of education, the language of commerce, etc., etc. But who speak their own language, who are organized on in their territory. They are organized with their own kings, with their own structure. Who, if you want, obeyed to two systems. In other words, in our area of the Bamileke area where you have a lot of kingdoms, the grassy kingdoms, a Cameroonian is at the same time the citizens of the nation born out of the French coexistence, but also the subject of the king of his area. So you to just say Cameroonian speaking French as if it doesn't mean anything. What does it mean to be a Cameroonian? You are a Bulu Cameroonian. You are a Bafunda Cameroonian. You are a Ntui Cameroonian, etc., etc. Mm-hmm. Let me put it very well. Take another case. This time out of, you know, the Francophone zone. Take our neighbor, like Nigeria. Mm-hmm. Nigeria is, if you want, one of the most populated country in Africa today, in Africa south of the Sahara. Now, Nigeria has not less than 300 ethnic groups, but yet the British people impose their language, which is the English language. But what does it mean to be a Nigerian? It doesn't make any sense. You are a Hausa Nigerian. You are a Yoruba Nigerian. You are an Igbo Nigerian, which means that 60% to 70% of the people live on the territory of the Igbo people, of the Yoruba people, speak the language of the Yoruba people in addition to the English language.
Hmm?
They pay, you know, they obey, you know, to the central government, but they also go along the line of their ancestral way of doing. So you understand the complexity.
Sure.
To become or to build these nations or to develop them into what you call democracy. A system of government where... Yeah.
I'm sorry, you raise an interesting point, Professor. For example, you gave the example of in Cameroon, you talked about how, say, in the north, they may have the Lamados, you know, in the grass kingdoms, they may have, you know, their own local kingdoms. But then you might have the presidency. So how much, and I want to use the word, I don't want to use the word power, but influence is a better word probably, would, say, a Lamado or a local, and I don't want to use the word chief either, but king, for a ruler, I'll say, for a better term, will have, because let's say you have an election for the country, and the country might elect a new, quote, president, end quote. And so what influence then would the local or the regional, shall I say, rulers have in the daily affairs of the people?
Excellent question. Excellent question. So when after World War II, these colonized territory turned into a nation, and the case of Cameroon divided, which was a German colony, divided into 4/5 to the French and 1/5 to the British people. There was a system of government that came into existence with the independence of Francophone part, 4/5 in 1960, and 1/5 they came to join Cameroon in 1961. So how does it function then? How has Cameroon so far functioned? You have, of course, what I call the Eurocentric type of administration, which was then the Federal Republic. And then, it was, first of all, for the Francophone, the Republic of Cameroon. Then when the Anglophone came, we formed the Federal Republic of Cameroon. Now, how did it happen? Cameroonians, who were, in 1884, from 1884 to 1919, under the German, how could they shift into mastering the French system of government or even the British government? How could they, in a short time of master or form people to speak a foreign language to form a central government and an administration, etc. How could that be possible? It was really, really difficult. So gradually, what the French did for the Francophone part, the French handpicked a few individuals. During the colonial day, they had already, by managing the people, they knew the group or the ethnic group with whom they could work easily. The mm-hmm. ethnic groups who were loyal to them. For instance, the Northerners, the Lamido, they were really, really loyal to them. Then in the south, the Catholic area, the Protestant in the south, you have the Bulu Beti people who were loyal to the French people. Those who were kind of non-submissive to them, like the grass fingers, the French people didn't like them. So as much as possible, they kept them away from the central government. So the colonial administration then formed the nucleus of what you call today the state of presidency. So how was the president formed then? Can we say that they had really been a real, how will I say, elections where Cameroonians could elect their leader? Absolutely not. Because they didn't even know what this. You're talking of a system of government that is not in their habit. Mm-hmm. As I told you, you had people who were under kings and Lamido and so on. So the French people handpicked a northerner and handpicked a few individuals who were versed in French language. They formed the administration, and slowly that administrators, they were, at the head of the various posts, and they could easily manage the country or help the French people during the colonial days to take the taxes and, exploit what the French people did. And after the independence, this group of people forming the central government from the president of the republic, who again, they might tell you that is an election. Well, I don't know, my mother never really voted. No. She would probably ask a neighbor to go and vote for him. In certain place, the king would give order to people to vote this or vote that. So there has never been a real election where you had, a leader who comes out and be, the real representative of the people. You see what I mean?
Yes.
That happened during the colonial days, and that is happening today. You can never say that in a country like Cameroon, there has ever been a real election. Because when you go to the northern, the first president was a northerner. The second one, Amadou Ahidjo, he stayed in power for almost 28 years. And every year, every 4 or 5 years, there was an election. And he reached the election and then, gave himself power for 28 years. In 1982, he had his prime minister. He had the constitution changed to prepare the person who would come after him. And he chose the present-day Paul Biya, who is from the South, the submissive Catholic people. And then Biya has been in power since 1982, and every 5 years. He reached the election, composed his government, a few groups, and mostly he relied on the people of his ethnic group, and he managed the nation. He's been in power since 1982, 38 years, he's 85. So it's really, really hard. Nobody can convince me that those who are in power in Francophone Africa, who have been managing their nation they've had a real, what you call, genuine election.
Because so is the system of government...
The majority of the population do not even speak the French. And
well,
the ballot, okay, all the bulletin and so on, they in French. How do you...
But let me ask you this, Professor.
You have the
picture. Is the system of government... Professor, is the system of government the same for Francophone and Anglophone? And when we say Anglophone, of course, Professor's already explained that Francophone, we're talking about the French. So Anglophone, we'd be talking about the British, correct?
Yes. Yeah.
And is the system of government the same for both? So for if someone is...
In Nigeria and most of these countries that were colonized by the Europeans, I mean, they adopted the system of government where you have the president of the republic, who and then you have the legislative and then the judiciary and so on and so forth. It's duplication of what was done or what is done in most Europe and even America today. And as I said, the language that is used in most of these countries are the language of the former colonial masters. And the bulk or the majority of the electors, in fact, they go without even speaking the language. Of course, there is, how will I say, the digital dimension of it, where the pictures, which will tell you, okay, this is the person. But in actual fact, it's very, very difficult to stand up and then claim that, well, I am really a person who has been elected and I'm in the majority. I doubt that. I challenge everybody from these 14 African nations to come and tell me that there has ever been a real, genuine election the way you have organized here in America, in France, and everywhere. I don't believe it. It has never happened.
Well, let's do this.
Had the
if
opportunity.
We could go ahead.
Those who had the opportunity, like the Northerner, who was handpicked by the French people to form this Eurocentric system of administration, when they have the power that be, the political power, the economic power, they control the economy of the country, they control the army, they can always stand up and then crush all those who would stand up and legitimately say, no, we don't accept you. And this has happened, and this is happening. And that's why you have this long-lasting tenure of presidents, whether you are talking of Cameroon or Cote d'Ivoire and so on and so forth. This is why you have in many of the Francophone countries, you've had, one military group stand up and say, why is that we can take power because you don't merit it, etc., etc. And at the moment that I'm talking to you, a country like Central African Republic, there's going to be an election and the country is divided. The Russians are in today because they are rebel group and rebellion is made because a former president say, I contest the candidate which is coming on today, I don't want you. And he forms his own group of people with the money, and then he contests what is going on. Now, in my Cameroon, what is going on today, the Anglophone for many years, not only the majority of Anglophone were from an ethnic or had a specific ethnic group territory, but you have this addition, this division that came one-fifth of the country was given to administered by the British, and then for fifth by the French. So you have the majority of Francophone. Since 1961, it's just the Francophone which have been in power. The Anglophone couldn't say anything, couldn't do anything. They knew what it is to form the administration. So at long last, after what I might call a literary contestation, a social upheaval, peaceful demand of justice, they never had any of their consideration taken care of. in 2016, they decided to take arms against the central government of Cameroon. And at the moment, the central government, which is not only francophone, it's wrong to say it's francophone, is based mostly on the ethnic group of the president of the republic, who has been managing the nation with mostly the people of his ethnic group. He has pumped money into the military, into the police, and so on. And with that, they always crack down on any validity of contestation. And when it went beyond them, France is behind, come and help them to maintain them in power. So, because they are there not to serve the interests of the nation, they are there to serve their personal interests, the interests of their few ethnic groups, and they depend on disappointment of the majority of the people.
Well, if we can, Professor, mentioned the word ethnic group several times, and so for people, because I know there's a distinction between an ethnic group and, say, a tribe, per se. So could you talk about that difference? When you say an ethnic group, you know, because sometimes people think the terms ethnic group and tribes are synonymous. So when you say ethnic, you're not talking about a tribe. Can you discuss that?
These are, Eurocentric concepts handpicked in order to describe or to reorganize the existing people that were in colonized territory, right? But there's a difference between a tribe and, you know, an ethnic group. A tribe is mostly based on blood relationship. The number is small. They may speak the same language, but they're not as large as an ethnic group would be. When you get into ethnic group, you may have not totally different, but people from the same source organized, who have come together, speaking probably not necessarily one major language, but a language with various, a variety of that language. But what the difference between the tribe and the ethnic group is not only the size, it's the political organization, the economic organization, and the cultural organization of those people. The Yoruba people are very well organized politically, culturally, etc. They were very well organized. The Tikar people were very well organized, and so on and so forth. So when you put them within the framework of the new nation, there is a tendency that on their territory, they tend to go together, elect only their own people. Even in town, when it comes to organize themselves, they tend to regroup themselves together, etc., and then, you know, serve their own group. But then what I mean is I favor ethnic groups because with an ethnic group, you already have an identity. You have a cultural identity. You have a political identity that existed before, that if you really develop a central government that tolerates each ethnic group very well organized, I think we can be able to build nations that go towards what you have here in America or in Canada and so on and so forth. What I mean is your the luck of America is that you have people of various ethnic groups who came together and developed some value. They had their value, and they respect central values. Now, what we need in Africa is not to destroy all those various ethnic groups. No, you should do that because that's what gives you your identity.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not Cameroonian. It doesn't mean anything for me to be a Cameroonian. No, I'm a Tikal Cameroonian. I'm a Grassier
mm-hmm.
Cameroonian. I feel
mm-hmm.
with my drinking, with my eating, with my dressing, and so on. That's what makes me really recognize myself that I'm from Ari. Now, what is bad is that instead of developing some kind of sharing with other ethnic groups, I tend to use the central power for my own ethnic group. And that's what has been happening, and that's not what should be.
Mm-hmm.
As much as possible, and I do believe that it can be done. If it's done here in the United States of America, if the African American, if the Caucasian American, if the Latino American, if all these very Native Americans, if they can live together within the territory and develop themselves and obey, share the same value, I don't know why it is impossible for people of Africa after what they did. And by the way, I say, they, in fact, when you have a nation like Nigeria, although you had divisions, they were already organized in that way before the arrival of the Europeans. What is wrong is the negative use of ethnicity, which is ethnocentrism, the negative use of tribe, which is tribalism,
mm-hmm.
which is excessive pride into your ethnic group, your tribe, excessive pride into your ethnic group, or if you want a thirst for power, greed to, how will I say, use the curse of the nation, use the wealth of the nation to only your own ethnic group, that's what should be decried. That's what should be rejected.
Let me ask you this.
Yes.
We have people who actually behave in a particular fashion, and they think, they truly believe that they are right. They truly believe that they are not behaving badly, you know. So let's say, for example, and I'll just use slavery, for example. I mean, we can look mm-hmm. at slavery now and look at it and see how obviously wrong it is to dehumanize another race of people based on the color of their skin, to enslave them, to, you know, all of the horrors of slavery. We can look at Hitler and look at what happened in the Holocaust, and we can look at that and say how clearly wrong that was to do that. But the people that were doing it at that time and the people that were living in that day, in that region, felt that this was fine. This was the way it was. I mean, so let's say, for example, if slavery in America lasted approximately 400 years, you take somebody that was born, a Caucasian child that was born in, say, the 200th year of slavery in America, they grow up seeing slaves. They grow up seeing their parents, you know, ruling another race of people. And for their life, in their lifetime, that's the way it is. It's not in their mind that we're doing something wrong. You know, this is just the way it is, you know. So how do you deprogram that type of psyche that says this is the way it is and it's not wrong, you know, because until that psyche has been deprogrammed and reprogrammed to say, no, that's clearly wrong. You know, how do you do that? How do you begin the process of the deprogramming so that when people look at, say, a situation where you had the Tutsis and the Hutus, you know, that situation in Rwanda, and it wasn't until God knows how many hundreds of thousands or millions of people were died before people realized, oh, this is wrong. This shouldn't be taking place. How do we begin the process to decolonize, not decolonize, well, that too, but deprogram the mind of the people so that it's clear, you know, so initially we don't have to wait hundreds of years or thousands of lives before we understand how wrong it is?
Excellent question. Excellent question. How would I answer you without bringing you to the nucleus of the society, which is a family? There's no way I can try an answer to what you are giving without bringing you to look at a family, a father who has three husband and wife and so on. Nuclear family with children and so on. Do the children behave the same way? You may have some greedy and some not developing the value that bring them to be together. That do not let what is human in them. And that family would have problems. But if the parents and a few individuals within that family work into bringing what is positive in them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I do believe that in the long run, that would lead into the establishment through mimic of what you might call the value that would come to be shared by a number of people in that family. And when you move from one family to another one, that's probably doable in a territory. You may have two people who have two pieces of land, each one has its own land. You may have one family which wants to take the most part of the land and so on. It may happen. But at one point, these two families, they can, after fight, you may find one or two people of the same, two different family or that different family that come together and say, no, instead of killing ourselves and crying all the time, maybe it's better for us to do it together, collectively. I do believe that. What I'm simply drawing at is there are values in each people in the world, whether you are talking of America, or you are talking of, how will I say, I'm talking of what we might call, quote-unquote, negative America, the slavery America. But during the slavery day, not everybody really believed in that system. A lot of people knew it was simply because, Juanza, it was simply because the cake wasn't enough for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
It was because, it was the land, and you had people to cultivate it, and et cetera. You needed people to do all that. And some came and believed that they could use other people to do all that. But within even the group of the people who believed in slavery, not all of them developed inhumanity in them. You have human in them.
Mm-hmm.
I do not believe that in Germany everybody was like Hitler. I do not.
True.
No. You had
True.
Good people in Germany.
True, true.
So I do not believe that in the ethnic group of my president or the Cameroonian president of the Republic, who has been there for 38 years, I do not believe that all his people are bad people and who believe that they can take all the wealth of Cameroon for themselves and leave all the other 20 million Cameroonians die. I do not believe that.
Mm-hmm.
So
I'm with you.
Within any social group, you would always have exceptional people who stand up and preach what is doable. And that's
mm-hmm.
why, and sometimes they are ready to sacrifice their life so that the positive value take precedence on negative value. Otherwise,
mm-hmm.
you would never have had the evolution of or the move from the America of slavery to the present day, no, to the, how will I say, Reconstruction America, and then civil rights America and the America of today. Take each period you would have find extreme, which is what I'm talking to you may sound, when I talked of these nation people struggling to form a nation, it may seem negative, you know, or it may seem pessimistic. No, on the contrary, I'm optimistic, because within these nations, you have good people who do believe that they have the right to live like everybody have the right to live. It's up to them, up to you, up to me, Jovenza. I didn't know you before. I was so narrow. But the moment I knew you with somebody, some value to bring out there, you say, Professor Doe, can we go together? I say, yes, we've been doing that, remember? So each society, each group of people have positive values that they can share among themselves, that they can stand up. But on the unfortunately, you will always have some people who do not instead let themselves go with negative values, who constitute roadblocks to the what I call the attempt, the fight to be together. That's exactly what the fight that we are fighting here, to be together, fighting about, you know, to the American value, the right to live, to breathe, and so on and so forth. That not 10% or 1% of Americans, they should have the wealth of the nation, etc. Fighting for a fair and just a structure that can profit almost everybody. I think that's what you have, a group of people who are back there. And I say that's what you are doing using this program in order to educate the people. What we are preaching here, Jovenza, we are not preaching negative value. We are telling people there's a possibility that we can be proud of ourselves. Have you ever seen me in my traditional regalia? Have you ever seen me in my have I had the opportunity eating the wonderful food that I've done? I wish we would do it one of these days.
So
that's
for sure.
What America, the America of positive value coming together. It's not necessary, how will I say, one dish McDonald's tomorrow, or McDonald's in the morning, McDonald's in the evening, and so on and so forth. Who would like that? That's why my role here, insisting on the teaching of various ethnic groups within the academic, is to say, okay, well, when I look at the Caucasian, they have positive value, but let the Caucasian not tell me that their value is the only value that can exist. That's a negative way of thinking. Let the Latino, let the African-American not think that, okay, no, we can share that together. So I have the, and this is where good people like Martin Luther King stand up. And I have a dream. My dream is that in a society, in this society, or in any society, should develop not the negative, not the cancer, no, but the best values that can bring the people together. That's what makes nation building a possibility. The hope.
Well, let's for a moment in the Ramoni, and we have a few moments left. We have about 10 minutes left in the broadcast. When it comes to nation building, what is a nation? When we talk about a nation, again, so that when people, because people have a concept when they think of a nation, they, whatever comes to mind is what they think about when they'll hear us discuss this. When you say nation, what do you mean? And what role does international aid play in the developing of a nation? Because if a country is going to be very dependent upon outside help to just survive, you know, then how much, what's the word I'm looking for? How powerful, or maybe that's not the word, or relevant can we say that they are as a, quote, nation, end quote, if in the absence of the international aid, they just perish? And then that question might take us into another show, but just we can start to answer that.
Let me say it again. What is happening in these new nations, in Africa in general, the problem is not poverty. Africa is not poor. Africa is the richest country in the world. The problem is the greed, what you were talking. A few individuals who believe that they can have the cake of the nation for themselves. And unfortunately, these few individuals are in contact with international power that be, that siphon the whole thing for themselves. Do you really think that, how will I say, a reasonable citizen from the rural area of Ohio need a milliard in order to survive? Do you really think that? So the man is dying simply because the Native American who is in Dakota and so on, he is feeling, he is being threatened because just a few individuals are not only using the resources that are already here in America, but they are threatening what they have over there. You see what I mean? No, in terms of nation building, these new nations do not need international aid. No, they don't. Because the international aid is just a way of enslaving them. What they need is developing values from what their own personal value, what existed before, coming together and the building and sharing. They can, you know, bring strong nation. I'm not saying that we should reject the Eurocentric structure of administration that exists today. They're there. But at the same time, we can make it that it works for everybody. Democracy can work in Africa, in these nations. It doesn't work simply because a few individuals do not do it the right way. They do it the wrong way.
Mm-hmm.
Let me, you know, tie it to what is happening at the moment in this country. Strong institutions are in this country. The funding fathers set things, how this country, President of the Republic, should be elected. Now look at what happened, right? The 3rd of November until now, the present President of the Republic does not acknowledge something which is there, even though he knows that he lost. Why? Why do Republicans keep to themselves and do not acknowledge that Joe Biden is the president-elect?
What will have to happen, Professor, is when we see this type of... Here's the interesting part. And this, I think, gets to the crux of, you know, our discussion, is that you have people on anytime somebody takes a position, you know, and there's an opposing view, the person with the opposing view thinks they are just as right as the person who holds the opposite view. Okay? He in no way or she in no way thinks that they are less right than the other person. And so it's like I heard somebody say once, and I think that it's a good analogy. Like we could look, you could look at this, you could go outside and say, oh, it's cold out here. And I could say, no, it's not, it's warm. We could argue about whether it's cold or warm, but we can't argue about whether it's 50 degrees. It's 50 degrees. That's the fact, you know. Or someone said that if, for example, I could pick up a box and say, this is heavy. You could pick up the same box and say, man, you're weak. This box is light. We can argue about whether the box is light or heavy, but we can't argue that the box weighs 75 pounds. That is the fact, you know. So when we can get people, and if you have people that are refusing to view what is a fact and will even debate you over that, you know, there's something deeper that we have to go into, and maybe we'll have to do a show on even perception and the role of religion, the role of God. I mean, because there's always another layer to pull back, you know, because if, for example, when we look at God, some people felt that it was not incompatible to go to church and have slaves, you know. So, I mean, so we have a lot to discuss. And we've covered this, everybody who's listening to this show, I just want everybody to know this was just the beginning. This was just the first show. I'm going to have Dr. Doho back, okay, so that we can continue this discussion and many others like it. I want you to tell your friends about this show, and you can share this link to this show with other people, because this is getting ready to get really, really, really interesting. I mean, we've just scratching the surface. Professor Doho, I want to take a moment and thank you for this. This is just an appetizer, you know, for the meat, if you will, for lack of a better term, that we will be digesting. And with your permission, I would love to have you back on the show so that we can continue our discussion. There's still some more, just even when we talk about nation building, what are some of the impediments to nation building, you know? And I think perception has a lot to do with that. But, Professor, I mean, I just want to thank you, because it has been an awesome, awesome. It's been a fast hour. It went by very, very, very fast. Concerning nation building, before we go, I mean, you can just start the conversation, some of the impediments to nation building that you, from your perspective, you see.
Yeah. What Africa needs today is an excellent foundation in terms of education. We have to make it possible that our youth, growing youth of Africa, they have access of education. By education, I'm simply talking of excellent values that put the human beings, the humanities, you know, into the rank. Not seeking that education simply from the former colonial or the Western, by digging into the values of their own people and then see what it makes and places the human being at the center. It also means understanding that we can use with some kind of love the environment that we have. You know, we explore our environment with some kind of love, put the value that we had in it. Javendra didn't use the forest simply like that. In order to even use a tree, they had to beg for the tree before they cut it. I think these are some of the kind of value, excellent education, how will I say, fair and just, strong institutions, not hesitating from big, from, how will I say, learning from what other countries have. And one of the things that I wouldn't hesitate, we, the diaspora, we, the African, the people of Africa, the daughters and sons of Africa, some of whom were dragged with their neck chained into this country, who have suffered and are at the center of the American system today, they are welcome. In terms, just they are being back to Africa, and look at their people. I mean, I'm not asking African Americans, the African, to take their wealth to go to. No, just going there and then telling them, share with them, really empowering. And if they have that possibility of building in Africa, why not? Why not? Israel is strong because the Jewish diaspora do that. East Asia, the dragons are strong today and sometimes dictate to the West. It's because the East diaspora did contribute. So not only strong, powerful institution, powerful value that we should share to the people, but trying to bring the external forces that are there, because the diaspora constitute a major factor. Your man, open your door to a friend. You never know. You come out of it, not small, all of it, stronger. He who opens himself to the other, believe me, does not diminish himself. He enriches himself. That's what Africa needs today. Local strength, the youth education of the youth, strong structure, but also the cooperation of the daughters and sons of the diaspora.
Yes, sir.
That's what I can, and as much as possible, tolerate one another. Where you are in your nation, whether we are built positively. And how would I not be able, happy with my people when I see what happened? The election changed this year because of the appeal of my people, the value up, because of what? No. Tomorrow, let's live with positive values, because without positive values, there's no way of looking at tomorrow positively. You see what I mean?
Absolutely. Professor, I want to thank you so much for your time agreeing to be my guest today, for the many minds that you've taught and influenced and shared your wisdom with. And I'm a beneficiary, you know, of your wisdom. I get to sit at your feet all the time. And so I'm very, very fortunate. I'm happy to share you with my listeners, and I'm just very, very pleased that you've agreed to be my guest, and we'll schedule you as soon as possible to come back on, and we can continue this dialogue. It's very, very important, and there's everybody, you again, trust me when I tell you, you've just scratched the surface with Professor Doho. This is a wise man, okay, a very educated man, and a very humble brother, and he's going to share with us of his wealth of knowledge, so we get to dip our cup into the spring and to benefit from the nourishment that it provides. Professor, thank you so much for being my guest today. I appreciate it.
It was a pleasure, real pleasure. Thank you so much, Ron.
Thank you. We'll have you back very, very soon. Everybody, that is Professor Gilbert Doho. He's professor at Case Western Reserve University in Cleveland, Ohio. He's an awesome, awesome brother. Again, I couldn't even read his whole bio because it would take up the whole show, but we're going to be discussing a lot in the coming weeks and months, and I guarantee you, you're going to grow from it. Again, it's one thing to have an idea about what's going on in the world. It's one thing to have an idea about what happened historically. But when you can talk to somebody who's an educator, I mean, at an institution of higher learning, that individual can come on and break things down for you and present a picture, paint a picture for you, and then color it in. You know, not just the outline, but color it in and fill in the blanks and fill in the gaps, then that is truly, truly a blessing. And we're honored to have him as our guest today. Everybody, again, we have an archive. If you like what you heard, and I know you did, all you have to do, you can just click follow. And then every time I do a show, you'll be notified of the date, the time, or the guest, the topic. So make sure you click follow, and then you'll be notified every time we do a show, okay? Thank you so much, everybody, for your time. My name is Jwanza. Who am I? I'm the one who, in giving, receives more. Who are you? Peace.